This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. With dozens of local breweries in operation, Cincinnati was once known as the beer capital of the world. But by the mid-70s, only two local breweries remained. Now, thanks to a growing list of craft beer makers and a renewed appreciation of the city's rich brewing history, Cincinnati is once again becoming known for its beer. Joining me this afternoon, Mike Morgan, author of Over the Rhine, When Beer Was King, and Steve Hampton, Executive Director of the Brewery District Urban Renewal Corporation. You can join our conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org, and you can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Mike, where do you start with the history of brewing in Cincinnati?
Well, you start from pretty much the beginning of the city of Cincinnati. I mean, when we were a young city, we started brewing pretty early, but we got serious about it when we got a lot of Germans here. And that's when we started to make real beer, and that's when we became a real beer-drinking city.
So what was the city's first brewery, and when did it open?
Peter Knoll, and it was 18... It depends on what source you go from, but it was about 1810, something like that.
So dating back to the 19th century.
Yeah, and we would have had people... I don't think people were in Cincinnati very long without beer. They would have done some home brewing, that type of thing. So that was our first commercial brewery.
So Steve, Over the Rhine, that was a focal point for brewing in the early days, wasn't it?
It was. And as the introduction of lager beer, that was where the city had space to grow. And so when these Germans started coming over in the 1840s and 1850s, that was where the city had room. And so that's where they established all these breweries. And that's where we have this really largest collection of these pre-prohibition breweries still remaining in the country, are in the Over the Rhine and West End neighborhoods. And there were some really unique characteristics. The hillsides played a big part of that with the lager beer production.
Mike, how many breweries did Cincinnati have during its peak years?
The number that people use as the highest is 36. But that number would have included a lot of bars that basically made their own beer in the back. So consistently throughout the 1800s, we had about a dozen to 18 that were in or adjacent to Over the Rhine and the West End. And we had about, 24 to 30 on a regional basis.
Steve, there are, I guess, a lot of remnants. It's almost like an archaeological kind of thing. There are a lot of remnants of the city's brewing past that you can still see.
Yes.
And Over the Rhine and some of the old breweries and architecture, they're still there as well.
Again, we think the largest collection of pre-prohibition brewery architecture in the country, but that consists of the brew houses, but also the malt houses and stables and offices and stock houses and all these other structures that were part of these breweries. And we have literally dozens and dozens of these structures left and kind of arrayed from the 1840s all the way up to 1930s and a few beyond. And their amazing collection of architecture really shows the progression of the architectural style, the progression of the function and technology that was so drastically changing in the country in Cincinnati at that time.
And Mike, your book makes a reference to tunnels. A lot of businesses have tunnels underneath them and over the Rhine. What's the story behind those?
Well, when we started making lager beer here, we did that before artificial refrigeration existed. And so the way they made lager beer was to dig deep enough to get to cave temperatures. That means that we had sub-basements here in Cincinnati, about 40 foot below street level. And they would then bring those spaces down to 40-some degrees, which is what they needed to make lager beer. That's why some of the spaces exist, to make the beer. But then once they made it, they also needed to keep it cool during Cincinnati summers. So a lot of these breweries, in addition to the spaces they had that they would make the beer in, they also had other spaces where they would store it. And those could be other parts of the brewery. They could also just be apartment buildings. So we can find lagering cellars under bars and under apartment buildings. Later on, they also started connecting some of these spaces by tunnels that went under the street. So we can continue to find tunnels that go underneath the street. And it's a pretty fascinating thing to find 10,000, 11,000 square foot of tunnel under your building in Over the Rhine.
So.
And as Steve alluded to a minute ago, there is no other city in the United States that seems to have that kind of network of tunnels and that has this building stock and this historic record of brewing, this kind of complete record that is not only the breweries themselves, but the buildings that were owned by the breweries, the apartment buildings, the places where brewery workers lived. You know, we have this whole history that is really unique to Cincinnati that nobody else has.
How widespread a tunnel system is this? I mean, would you find these all over the city or just in one particular area?
Predominantly in over the Rhine and the areas close to over the Rhine, you know, parts of the West End and Court Street, you know, into the Central Business District. That's most of what is left. But there were breweries throughout town, so we're not really sure where all the rest of them may be.
And there were a lot of, you know, there were a couple of reasons, you know, Mike alluded to the production of lager beer. But before this mechanical refrigeration, they could only make beer kind of when it was tempered out. It would get too warm in the middle of summer. So you actually have to make an entire summer's worth of beer and store that, which is one reason why there are these massive cellars all over the place. And laws changed. You couldn't bottle your beer in the same building where you brewed it. In the 1890s, they passed a law that you could actually connect it via tunnel and pipe the beer. But so there were a lot of reasons why this changed kind of all through its history.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And you can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And at its peak, was Cincinnati the largest beer-making city in the country, or was that Milwaukee or someplace else?
It would have been New York.
Okay.
And Chicago secondarily. I think Cincinnati was the largest per capita, but just by sheer volume of population, New York and Chicago were bigger. Philadelphia was also bigger throughout most of the 19th century.
Right. Now, where Cincinnati was number one was in our consumption of beer. We drank over 40 gallons of beer for every man, woman, and child, which was 2.5 times the national average. So we maybe didn't make as much, but we certainly drank enough of it.
What are some of the iconic names? Wiedemann, Hudepohl from the past. What are some of the
Wiedemann would have been Northern Kentucky, but actually George Wiedemann got his start brewing beer as the brewmaster at the Kaufman Brewery right on Vine Street and over the Rhine. Kaufman, Moorline is the name you still see, Schmidt, Vindish Mohlhauser, Hauk. Actually, you see a lot of these names still in other places in the city, out in Westchester, Sharonville. So there was a bigger connection than just this over the Rhine neighborhood. A lot of these brewers would have their farms out kind of in what is now the suburbs and get away from the heat and the dirt and the smog in the summer, rest their draft horses. So there's these connections all throughout the region. Of these brewers, not just right in the heart of the city.
Let's talk with Jay from Northside. Good afternoon, Jay.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if your panel knew, I've got a book here called The Industrial Workers of the World First 100 Years by Fred Thompson and John Becken, which names the Jackson Brewery in Cincinnati as the site of America's first stay-in strike in 1884. Wondering if they had heard of that at all.
That's a very interesting question. Thanks, Jay. We appreciate that question. And either one of you,
I have not heard of Jackson being the first site of the stay-in strike, but Cincinnati was at the forefront of the brewery workers' union movement. And the brewery workers' union was housed here in Cincinnati for most of its lifetime. So I had not heard that specifically, and thanks for the information, but it does make perfect sense.
And the Jackson Brewery actually still stands at the head of Elm Street right at McMicken. It's actually one of the most fantastic series of lager cellars in the city. And so that brewery does still stand. And actually, the brewery workers union hall actually still stands on Vine Street as you go up the hill. So there's still a lot of that physical connection to that history.
Mike, how intertwined were the city's politics and social issues with beer brewing back in the early days?
They were extremely interconnected. And they were interconnected from a purely social standpoint. Cincinnati was founded originally by predominantly Anglo-Saxons, people from New Jersey and kind of second-generation Americans mostly. And when the Germans and the Irish started to arrive here after we finished the canal in 1828, they started to change the character of the city of Cincinnati. And they started to change some of the value system. And so the Germans and the Irish, my people, they like to drink. They like to drink quite a bit, and they like to drink on Sundays. And that was offensive to a lot of the earlier residents of the city, It was also offensive to a lot of people on a state level. And it was illegal in the state of Ohio from 1831 on through Prohibition to sell alcohol on Sundays. But Sundays happened to be the most productive day for alcohol sales in the city of Cincinnati. So we had this long tradition as a city of ignoring that Sunday closing law, and it really drove a lot of our politics.
Rita, Renita sent us a question. This was going back to the tunnels that we were discussing. She wanted to know if any of the tunnels were used in the Underground Railroad, perhaps.
Not to our knowledge. These were functioning breweries. Most of them were not built until the 1850s, 1860s. So it would have been right about that time, not as much involved. And to our knowledge, there wasn't. Remember, this was a very well-built-up neighborhood, a very populated neighborhood. 44,000 people lived in over the Rhine. And, you know, so it would have been very impractical to try to take people through those tunnels in such a busy neighborhood. So to our knowledge, there wasn't any connection there.
Let's talk with Mark from Cincinnati. Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
Good, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thank you very much. And it's a very interesting topic you have here.
Thank you.
Just wanted to mention that about the tunnels that you're speaking of, I've recently purchased a building on 12th Street and over the Rhine. I used to live in over the Rhine. I understand the buildings are all built mostly in the 1850s. The commercial space that we own underneath it, there's a basement. And in that basement, as you mentioned, looks like there were tunnels. Some of them were all plugged in, but you can tell that there were tunnels. And as they were saying, it's exactly about 30 to 40 feet underneath the ground, huge cobblestones. And it was very interesting to me to understand the history behind it. And for the longest time, we thought those were made to smuggle something or other. And now it kind of makes more sense of what your speakers are saying. It's just fascinating to hear about the history of those old buildings. And specifically, buildings are built in the 1850s and 1860s. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. We appreciate your call.
Again, that's one of the really fascinating and fun things about this neighborhood and the city is that even in, 2013, we're still rediscovering these, century plus old structures because so many of them were sealed up because of as technology advanced, they became obsolete from a functional level. And then Prohibition on top of that closed many of these breweries. So many of these spaces have been sealed up and really lost to history right under our feet. I'd love to hear from the caller, you can to understand maybe later on where exactly he's at, see if we can trace the history of that brewery depending on where he's at on 12th Street. But certainly there were a number of them through that location. Again, as Mike talked about earlier, there are a lot of these lagering spaces that weren't under breweries per se, but adjacent or around the corner from the actual breweries that were used for storage.
One of the reasons that I think we lost some of these spaces was that although they were built originally for legitimate purposes, when Prohibition came around, that ceased to be the case with some of them. And a building that's known to a lot of people as the Mockbee Building, it was originally the Bellevue Brewery, was owned by George Remus during Prohibition. And so we're pretty confident that that was one of the spaces, one of the lagering cellars that was used as a speakeasy. But we suspect that others of them were used to make beer, to be speakeasies, or to be a perfect place to hide booze during Prohibition.
Talk about some of the other effects that Prohibition had on the city's brewing industry.
It was really damaging from an economic standpoint. I mean, when we look at the fact that we had, as I said, at that point, breweries were kind of starting to decline. The number of saloons were starting to decline because of a lot of dry laws. But we still had, somewhere around about 1,000 saloons citywide. We had around about 20-some breweries on a regional level. And each one of those breweries is employing anywhere from a dozen to 100, couple hundred people. The saloons are all, employing a dozen or so plus people. So there were a lot of people that were directly employed in those industries. And then you get into all the industries that the other industries that were affected, the cooperage industry and sort of the side malt businesses and hop businesses. There were just thousands and thousands of jobs that were wiped out here in Cincinnati by Prohibition.
And on top of that, then basically an entire culture was made illegal overnight. You know, the Germans brought their love of a beer and lager beer, and it was very integral to their culture and the the social life and cultural life. And all of a sudden, now that on the Sunday on your day off, you couldn't kick back with your friends and have a beer, and that that whole idea of the social nature of that. And so that was a very direct kind of stake in the heart of the culture of the city as well.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk with Ben from Prospect Hill. Hi, Ben. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you. Good afternoon. I was curious to know, I mean, I think a lot of people would be very interested to know whether these places, the buildings that remain and so on, would be available for tour or anything. Could we get in these things and see them? And I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate the question.
Yes, we actually, the Brewery District, we actually offer tours throughout most of the year, we're kind of done with this year. We do tend to keep them to the warmer months, but we offer tours starting at Bockfest weekend all throughout the summer, and Oktoberfest weekend as well, and it's a great way to actually see these buildings, go into these spaces. You know, one of the things about all this, all the old buildings and the architecture of these neighborhoods is that you can only really experience them up close and walking. You know, driving by in a bus, driving by in a car, you can't look up, you can't see all those details. And to walk through this neighborhood and into these spaces, both up and down, is a pretty amazing to see them in person.
And Ben, I'm involved with the Brewery District. I also do my own private tours, and you can learn more about those at saloontours.com. And we'll do those for private groups of people and are happy to do that throughout the holiday season. If I can get that plug in.
You already did. 513-419-7100 if you have a question or comment. And what is the state of beer brewing in Cincinnati today? I guess we are experiencing a revitalization, aren't we?
We are. There's, for a period of time, there were no local Cincinnati breweries operating. From about 99 on, the Hudepohl and Schanling had merged and were sold to out-of-town owners. The actual production brewery was sold to Sam Adams. So there was beer being made here, but no more local brands until about 2003. And then we started to see that was the rebirth of the new Christian Moore line. But we've seen a real resurgence of small craft breweries kind of both in the city core and around. Most of them are small, but they bring a lot of passion and good beer. There's been a very strong home brewing presence over the years. And so all that's kind of coming together and really regrowing again with, as you mentioned early in your intro, is that the appreciation of our history and the appreciation of good quality beer is growing again. So it's definitely on an upswing, and that's a trend we're really seeing nationwide as well.
And Chuck's got Chuck from Clifton has a call. He has kind of a related question. Chuck, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi. Great program. I was wondering what the brewery organization is doing to help encourage redevelopment and over the Rhine. What current and future plans you have, and I'll take the answer off air.
Thank you, Chuck. We appreciate the question.
Well, Chuck, what we have is actually we have a master plan we unveiled about a year and a half ago. We worked all through 2012 working with the city of Cincinnati. It's actually been passed and approved as an official city planning document. And there's eight different initiatives that we have to help repopulate the neighborhood with residents and businesses and visitors. And those range from improving the parks and green spaces in the neighborhood to complete streets, making the streets better for pedestrians and bicyclists, all the way up to the Cincinnati Brewing Heritage Trail. This is going to be a world-class heritage trail with signage on the buildings and the right-of-way, interactive tours, as a way to celebrate our history and share it with the world and bring people here. Heritage tourism is a huge potential economic driver for the city, and as a whole, the city has not done a good job of really promoting that. We have an amazing history, not only in Over the Rhine, but all throughout the city, but this will be one way to show our history with the world and bring people here there and share with them in person.
So the brewery business is still playing an important role in Cincinnati's economy then?
It is. You know, in the brewery district, you know, there's a couple of craft breweries, Christian Moorline, Rheingeist, Sam Adams. But, you know, craft-based business is a big piece of that. We know we're not going to, unfortunately, repopulate the neighborhood with all breweries again, but these buildings are fantastic for other light industrial uses. And again, that appreciation of beer, whether it's in, you know, in brewing of beer, whether it's in Over the Rhine or in other neighborhoods, that all ties in with that bigger piece of our heritage.
Let's talk to Adam from Pleasant Ridge. Good afternoon, Adam.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a beer buyer for a large retailer here in Cincinnati, and one of the things I love about the brewery resurgence that we have is the close relationship I'm able to build with these guys and really be able to speak personally about their products. So that's always really exciting for me. But my question is more of a historical one. You talk about the side businesses of the breweries historically and how they were affected by Prohibition. You mentioned the malt houses and the hops and everything like that. Historically, were the hops that were used in the beer brewing, were they grown here in the Midwest or were they imported from other places?
Adam, thanks for your question. We appreciate it.
Predominantly grown here in the Midwest, and a lot of those actually were grown up around the Westchester area, both the grain and the hops.
Westchester area, that's interesting.
Correct.
My home turf. I would never have thought that.
That was remote farmland.
Michael from Northside. Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Good, thank you.
And what question do you have?
I was curious to know, they mentioned that previous population for the Over the Rhine area would have been 44,000, and then you also put out a number of breweries as well as saloons around Over the Rhine. How does that compare to what population and number of saloons/bars is today?
Okay, Michael, good question. Thank you very much.
We're about 10%, actually. In 1890, there were a little over 2,000 liquor licenses issued within the city of Cincinnati. And physically, it was a little different in how it was configured, but the population was similar. And today, we have roughly about 200 full liquor licenses in that same city. So we were drinking quite a bit more in the 1800s than we are now.
Okay. And let's see. The other thing that I've noticed that's kind of a trend is that not only do you have these smaller breweries popping up, there seems to be a lot of interest in home brewing. That's a resurgence in that. Am I seeing that correctly?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's a gateway for a lot of people to better beer and the craft beer movement is that, you know, learning what goes into beer and learning how it's made and how the different ingredients and the different brewing processes can make such dramatic changes to the flavor. Again, we're very lucky here in Cincinnati. We have a handful of very good home brewing supply stores and a couple of very good home brewing clubs that people can be a part of and learn that knowledge. And very quickly, you find a lot of people get very vested in that. And, you know, some of these guys have actually gone on to actually open breweries, you know, from the home brewing days.
So my nephew, I keep telling him, you should open your own distillery. He's hooked on it. Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Mike Morgan is author of Over the Rhine When Beer Was King, and Steve Hampton is executive director of the Brewery District Urban Renewal Corporation. After the break, we'll explore another Cincinnati tradition, boxing. And in about 24 minutes, Ann Thompson tells us how an extremely cold treatment is helping cancer patients. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.